Well, I think self-awareness in general in a manager is crucial. And I here's a beautiful one. I was teaching a management class in Ames, Iowa to a group of managers. The room was full. It was like 30 people in the room. And one manager who was sitting front and center, so there was no hiding, this person stuck their hand up and said, I just want to say that every manager needs to go to therapy.
Yes.
Because if you don't take care of your own stuff, you're no good to the rest of your team. And I thought that was a brave thing to say, you know, out loud. And they said it in front of the whole room and a bunch of people nodded their heads. They're like, yeah, absolutely. It broke the seal on that conversation. People are like, oh yeah, therapy is really important. So self-awareness, you know, to make sure that you are aware of what's holding you back or causing you to do things that maybe aren't very productive.
Welcome to Manager to Manager, a podcast about the experiences of people leaders and how we can enable them to lead engaged, healthy, and high-performing teams. I'm Kamaria Scott, your host, and I'm thrilled to have you join us as we learn, lead, and succeed together.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Manager to Manager. I'm Kamaria Scott. If you have seen me live or heard any of our episodes, you know that I am a huge fan of finding your tribe or your community and surrounding yourself with people who have similar interests. And today is no different. I am super excited to welcome Eric Girard to the episode. He, like myself, is so passionate about helping people leaders lead great and engaged teams. He helps new managers kind of gain their footing and get a great start to leading people. So Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh gosh, I'm so glad to have you. And I do have to give a shout out to our mutual friend, Tracy, who introduced us. It's always wonderful to have people who know your common interests and will bring you together so that you can have a shared conversation. So let's just jump right in. Would you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, what you do today in your business, and just you as a people leader?
Yeah. So when people ask what I do, I usually use the shortcut of management consultant. Most people have a vague idea what a management consultant is. But mainly my job is helping new managers transform from being a great individual contributor to a great people manager. And that is two completely separate things. You know, so being a great financial analyst or being a great engineer is completely different from being a great manager of financial analysts or manager of engineers. So I help folks make that transition. I've been in learning and development for over 30 years, including 20 years in Silicon Valley in management development. And right now I'm the CEO of Girard Training Solutions. And that's what I do with my mighty team of contractors and consultants who help me out. So not only do I run the company, but I'm also the lead facilitator, and I also design the courses and everything else in between. And then I've got folks who help run the social media presence, graphic design, instructional design, and publicity. My experience as a people leader goes back into my early days of Silicon Valley, where I was promoted to become the manager of a team that I was on. So I was promoted over to other people. And that was my first management gig. And unfortunately, it was also my worst management gig because I had been peers with these two other people. My boss said, you know, you said that you wanted a management role. So here it is. I'm going to promote you over these two folks. What do you think? And I said, yes, absolutely. He said, great. By the way, one of them is a problem child and I want him gone. So that was my introduction to management, was fire one of your colleagues.
Oh my goodness.
And so I didn't get to do a lot of the things that I teach because I was too busy performance managing someone who really just needed some extra attention. They didn't need to be performance managed. They needed to be just guided in the right direction. So it was a bad start.
One of the reasons why I'm always super insistent that any guests on this show actually have been a people leader is because there is a very big difference between what we textbooks teach people. And then you get in the role and there's so many situations and circumstances that you're like, wait a minute, there was no chapter for this. There was no class for this. I love that you mentioned that you took over the team that you were leading because so many people find themselves in that situation when they go from friend to leader. And that makes the job even more challenging. One way to look at becoming a people leader is that it's not really a promotion, it's a complete job change. And so when you were good at whatever it is you were doing, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have what it takes to now lead the team and deal with some of the difficult situations that come along with people leadership. We are kindred spirits. I am also an instructional designer, L&D person. And so I know it shapes how I decide what content goes into my training and what focal points and the stories I tell. So I love that you right off the bat have a personal experience that has shaped how you've done that. I want to share with the listeners that you have recently written a book for new managers to kind of get them started on their way. Lead Like a Pro. So just really quickly, tell us a little bit about that.
So the book is called Lead Like a Pro, The Essential Guide for New Managers. And it is essential. It's not a very thick book, but the whole idea is that in a couple hours sitting, you can sit and read this thing and understand enough of what it takes to be a good manager and a good leader. It's not the exhaustive tome, but I did do a lot of research to make sure that everything that I put in the book is current and up to date and valid and reliable. And it covers everything from bringing the empathy to the role all the way through to managing change and everything in between, what I would call the basic blocking and tackling. So for example, delegation, goal setting, coaching, feedback, and more is what I talk about in this thing.
There's quite a few things covered there, and I was really grateful to have the opportunity to go through the book before our conversation. And drawing back upon that experience of having to lead your team and finding yourself in a situation that you now have personal firsthand experiences, I'm wondering if there's anything from your own experience as a people leader that you definitely were like, I wish I knew this back then, and this definitely must go in the book. So what from your own experiences where you're like, this is a topic that is a must-have for people leaders. I know firsthand, if I'd known this, if someone had given me this in the beginning, it might have made the transition a little bit easier.
That's an easy one. It's the first and longest chapter in the book. Chapter one is called Bring the Empathy. Yeah. And it's all about making a case, a business case, for why managers in the 2020s need to build their empathy skills. It's no longer just a squishy skill. It's no longer for touchy-feely types. This is actually a skill that will make and save your company money if your managers are a little more empathetic and a little more understanding. That doesn't mean that I'm encouraging managers to become pushovers or to become therapists. That's not my role. Rather to say, okay, you know what? I can really, really listen intently to what somebody is saying. I can feel what they feel. And then at the end of the day, can still move toward results because, you know, we're still held to results, right? We still have to get things done in business. But you can help somebody get over a roadblock if you're an excellent listener, if you're a more empathetic human being, you can help get somebody over a hump. Or if they're facing a big challenge, you can guide them toward the employee assistance program or get them help someplace else so that they get the issue handled and get back to work. Mm-hmm. I think that empathy is the power skill of the 2020s, especially with ChatGPT and AI. My position is that AI is never going to out-human a human. Mm-hmm. And what's going to distinguish a great manager from a good manager or a bot is that person's ability to be empathetic and an excellent listener.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. There is so much that AI is taking over, but the ability to connect person to person is something that is still very unique to humans, to listen and to help people solve their problems. Just a few weeks ago, I had the privilege of facilitating a coaching session for sales leaders who were changing their sales strategy, and the concept of empathy came up. And it was very interesting because the dialogue around it really was, to your point, we don't want them to not meet their sales goals, but we want to be empathetic. But like, how do we talk about it in a way where they understand the frustrations? And we almost kind of tiptoed around the concept of empathy. And so I feel like in some ways it gets a bad rep. So I'm wondering, in 2023, why do you think people struggle so much with the concept of empathy? And you said it in your book, right? It's not an either or of being able to relate to someone, what someone is feeling, and still help them to achieve where they're going. Why do you think we're still struggling with that concept as people leaders and putting that into practice in a way that creates a win-win situation?
Well, my personal opinion, and I'll preface it with, this is my personal opinion. I think people are afraid of being I'm going to say they're afraid of being taken advantage of, that people are afraid of being too nice. And then having somebody who maybe has different motives, have them steamroll right over you. Mm-hmm. And so I think that as a manager, you need to educate yourself on how to be empathetic and how to be a great listener, and also how to set excellent goals, how to delegate, how to coach and provide feedback, and how to have performance conversations all at the same time. I think it's possible to be empathetic while you're having a conversation that terminates an employee. I think you can do both. And I think that people just haven't learned how to do both. And so there, I think folks are afraid of just being taken advantage of.
Interesting.
And so we kind of revert back to, okay, well, then I need to be tough. I'm the manager. I need to be tough. And that just demotivates people and lowers productivity.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I think that being afraid of being taken advantage of, but also not knowing how to both deal with emotions and deal with results at the same time can be a struggle. And knowing, I think, the flex of sometimes you do have to pull back on results for a minute to make sure the person is whole. And then you have to kind of get them back where they need to be. In one of the scenarios I can think about in my own example, I had someone on my team who was struggling and was having some personal life challenges that were causing some personal mental health challenges. And the concept of empathy for me was not necessarily just to say, okay, well, you don't have to do your work, but to really sit down and problem solve with her and say, let's brainstorm what we can do to help you get through this time period. And maybe for the next week or so, I'll shield you. But then after that, let's figure out how to get you back to where you need to be. And so I think the navigation of the conversation sometimes is difficult for people leaders.
Yeah, I agree. I think providing space for managers, especially new managers, new leaders, to practice having those kinds of conversations is really important. Depending on your family of origin, depending on how you grew up in a corporation, you may not have ever really practiced being empathetic and holding those dual roles of being an empathetic, kind human being and also holding somebody accountable.
Right.
And my position is you can do both at the same time. I can be extremely kind and empathetic to you while also holding you to an agreement you made last month.
Yes.
You know, I think, and I think we need to do that. Otherwise, things don't get done. I think it comes down to either or thinking. You know, either I'm nice and I get steamrolled, or I'm a jerk and I get things done. And I don't think it has to be that way.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned crucial conversations in your book, and I cannot remember what that dichotomous thinking is called.
Oh, my goodness.
So if any of you listeners have read Crucial Conversations and you know what that dichotomous either-or thinking is called, you just put it in the show notes for us. But it's that thinking, that fool's choice thinking, that it has to be one or the other when there's plenty of space in between to lead people with empathy and care and so hold them accountable.
You actually named it. It is the fool's choice. Fool's choice or the sucker's choice.
Sucker's choice, that's what he called it. I think getting people away from that is probably one of the first steps to getting them to successfully leading with empathy and implementing it in their personal style. Something else that you mentioned that I really loved was building a habit of kindness. I think you might have even mentioned it before we dove into empathy. And for people to make a deliberate effort, and maybe even with someone they find challenging, to just be kind over a period of time. I found that interesting because in all the years that I have taught leadership development, the concept of kindness as a people leader has never come up. So I am curious as to what stood out for you. What made you think this is a topic that bears mention for new leaders, for them to understand that it's important for them to demonstrate this as a people leader, and why it's important as a foundation?
Well, of course, it ties closely into empathy. And there is a business case for that that I make in the book. And kindness is an extension or an adjacent piece to empathy. I think that if you're kind to folks, and kind doesn't mean being artificially nice. Sometimes, like as Brené Brown says, clear is kind, unclear is unkind. And so sometimes the kindest thing you can do is while watching your tone of voice, while watching your word choice, and while making sure that you're delivering feedback in a private setting, letting somebody know that their performance is not up to par and it needs to change. But you know, so it's not about, again, it's not about being touchy-feely. It's not about, you know, something that would make somebody go, ew, I got, no. It's about, look, I just want to let you know where you stand. This is where I stand. This is where you stand. This is where you're falling short. And here are some suggestions to fill that gap. And just being clear about it. And I would say the big thing, because I learned this lesson the hard way in Silicon Valley, one of the jobs I had a manager who used shame and coercion to get us to do stuff. And she would dress us down in front of the rest of the team. And it was all about, you know, body language, tone of voice, word choice. It was terrible. It was really, really bad. Yeah, stuff got done. But guess who we gossiped about behind her back whenever she wasn't around? I mean, it was not a happy team. It was a very dysfunctional team.
And I bet that to some extent, there was some negative impacts on performance. Maybe you were giving her what she asked for, but were you giving her your best and brightest? Were you giving her more? Were you giving her innovation, ingenuity, all of those things?
Speaking for myself, she was getting exactly what she needed and not a drop more. Whereas I've worked for some managers who I would bend over backwards for. I would get last on the moon for them if they asked.
Yeah.
Because I always know where I stood with them. And I always knew what was expected and what was wanted, and I was treated well.
Yeah.
I was treated like a colleague rather than an employee. And one of my favorite bosses, Brent, who I mentioned in the book, he was my first manager when I moved to Silicon Valley in 1999. We're still in touch. He's a friend of mine. He contributed to the book. He's been on my podcast. We talk often. Because of the way he came across as a manager, which was sometimes harsh, you know, like if I had really blown it, he would let me know I'd really blown it. But it wasn't a judgment against me and my worth. It was about that action you took was the wrong action. And how can you do better next time? It was just small things like that made a huge difference.
It's really interesting because we don't necessarily teach that in most management development courses. We teach almost like the tactical thing without giving the context or saying, you can have this conversation. It might be difficult. It's because the way that you deliver it, if you deliver it with kindness, if you deliver it in a way that even displays empathy, what you perceive as a difficult conversation actually may not be that difficult. Because to your point, I've had to tell people that we don't think you're a good fit for this role. There might be something else that's better suited for you. And that's a difficult conversation because you can't say, you know, you're a failure, but you might say, I don't know if this is a good fit, or I don't know if this role uses the best skills and talents that you have. And I'm curious if it even makes you happy to do this role. And if not, let's together go on a journey to find you something that's going to be a better fit where you're going to be able to be successful and you might feel more motivated. Right? Even tough conversations when delivered with kindness can still be successful. And I don't know your take on this, but I do think people, leaders who shy away from difficult conversations, they're afraid of that outcome. They're afraid that the conversation is going to go left. And I don't know that we ever teach them that one of the key ways to keep the conversation on track, yes, you have these objectives you need to hit a conversation, but the way you deliver it is just as important as what you have to say.
Absolutely. I would say the delivery is most of it. Starting with fundamentals, and this all comes from experience, and having lived it myself. So things not to do. Don't deliver feedback in public. Don't deliver critical or constructive feedback in public. Don't do it in front of other members of the team. Don't use a critical or condescending tone of voice. Be very careful about your word choice and the words that you use. I mean, these are all the flip side of just one instance of feedback I got from one manager who ultimately got managed at themselves in Silicon Valley. It was no fun at all. And yet, if I'm fair and if I really think about it, what this person was trying to say, at the very essence of it, probably had some merit.
Sure.
At the kernel of it, there was probably something that needed to be addressed, but they went about it the wrong way. and got 180 degrees from the reaction that we're probably looking for. So yeah, I'm right there with you. Delivery is not everything, but it's a lot.
It is quite a bit. One of the things that I really loved about your book was that you gave people pragmatic ways to go about doing things. Like I loved like the, here's how you actually build a habit of kindness, or here's how you do X, Y, and Z. And I think that was really helpful. One of the things that really stood out to me that I enjoyed about the book was the part about managing change, because we are in such a constant state of change now. I mean, it's like rapid fire. Every day you come in and something is different. We've bought a company. We've sold a company. You may or may not work here anymore. Your friends may or may not work here anymore. The technology is different. There's always a change. And we didn't always talk to new managers about change leadership, change management, managing change. We always thought of it as maybe a more in-depth concept, but you pulled it in right in the beginning. Let's talk about that for a minute. Why did you feel like it was important for even now new managers to have the conversation around change and to know what their role is?
Well, I think you said it, that it's never ending. Change is never ending. I've been studying and teaching change since the late 90s, and it's getting faster and faster and faster. I mean, just this year, think about all the different apps you can get that use AI. You know, we went from zero not long ago to dozens and dozens of AI apps, and I have not tried them all. I don't know if I'm ever going to get caught up with them all, but it is just super important that anybody working in technology or in industry at all be comfortable with the fact that where things were yesterday when you left the office or when you left your desk, probably not going to be there when you get back. Mm-hmm. You know, 8, 10, 12 hours later, things are probably going to be different. And so I think teaching managers to be change hardy themselves, to be resilient and to understand, okay, change is constant. I'm not going to change that. I'm not going to make change slow down, but I can change my approach and my attitude toward change. And sort of bolstering themselves, saying, okay, change is just something that's going to keep coming, and I can change my own attitude toward change. And then helping them spot how their teams are doing with change and move their teams through a healthy curve, getting to a point where they're okay. All right, you know, it keeps happening and I'm fine and I can roll with it like water off a duck's back. It's no big deal. So I think there's that awareness piece for manager and employee alike, and then the extra skill for the manager of being able to have that conversation with the employee to move them through. Because it just keeps happening. You get change one, change two, change three, change four, change 100, all layered on top of each other.
Yes.
And paying attention to self-care in that case is really important. So there's going to come a point when you are just cooked. Mm-hmm. Call a timeout and go take a break. Lock your laptop up, put your phone away, and go away for a couple of days and just detox, you know, in whatever way works best for you. We have a resort that we go to once a year up in the Sierra Nevada mountains of California. Mm. And I do my best every year to leave my laptop locked up. Yeah. And this resort has no Wi-Fi. There's not even a payphone on the property. And it's like, okay, I'm going to do my best to just chill out and sit by the river and drink a cup of coffee and read my book. And that's what I'm doing this week. So you have to take care of yourself in whatever way works best for you, because change is never ending.
There's three things that just jump out of my head as you were talking, and I'm going to hope I remember all of them by the time I finish asking. The first thing that jumped out in my head is, as a manager, your role is to help people get through the different stages. And no matter what change model you prefer, your job is to always really be scanning. And I do think maybe that's another skill or subtle thing that sometimes gets missed in leadership development and management training, is that a large part of your job as a people leader is watching and monitoring. I always say it's like playing I Spy Private Eye, to see the signs of where people are on your team. I mean, I think it's the essence of situational leadership, right? They need to be able to diagnose and they need to be able to react. But outside of that one concept, I don't know that we emphasize enough how important or how much of your role of, as a people leader is really just being in tune with what's happening with your team and responding accordingly, especially during times of change. So I'm wondering if you can speak to that, just like the heightened awareness that a people leader has to have in this new state of change.
Well, you mentioned, for example, situational leadership. I love SL2. I love Blanchard. I'm also certified in DISC and really a big fan of DISC. And so the idea is, in general, whether it's SL2 or DISC or change management and any of the change management models that exist, is self-awareness and then kind of a heightened vigilance of watching for other people's reaction to change. For example, in the book, I use the Bridges model. So you're going to go through endings, the neutral zone, and beginnings, and being able to catch that in yourself. And then I give signs and symptoms for things that a manager should be looking for to see what their team is doing. What are they experiencing and why, and how are they acting? What are the behaviors you can observe to say, this person is afraid of losing something? Maybe a quick conversation to clarify what they're actually losing versus what they're not losing. And being able to step in and take quick action because your antenna are up and you're seeing people act out a certain way. It's like, I wonder if maybe Camarilla is in that neutral zone and she's let go of one trapeze and the other one isn't there yet and she's freaking out. Right. I think it's just educating yourself a bit. I mean, William Bridges' Transitions book is not very thick. I encapsulate enough of it in my book just to make the point, but doing some reading about change and change management is very worthwhile as a manager to help your team build their change muscles and be able to deal with it over and over again on a daily basis.
Yeah. And I like, you mentioned change mastery in there as a concept. And I'm a military child. So my father was in the military. We moved, you know, every 3 years like clockwork for a large part of my childhood. And so I love change. Like it just, it's to me, I always see it as a new opportunity, a new beginning, just a chance to write a different story. And so my ability to work through change, I find sometimes it's higher than most people's. But for a lot of people, change can be difficult and it can be just honestly nerve-wracking because of the unknown. And the ability to help people navigate that and to be comfortable with the uncomfortableness, to know that they'll be okay as they move through the stages, I think is one of the hallmarks of a great people leader. And what you said about being able to assess first your own tolerance for what's happening, because it's really difficult to lead somebody else through something when you yourself are struggling with it. So, and you mentioned it's actually in several different parts of the book where you talk about the ability or the importance of being self-aware in various situations because it influences how you might approach leading your team. So how critical is that? What would you advise other people leaders in terms of being diligent about self-awareness, not just in times of change, but just in a variety of different areas as you start leading a team?
Well, first off, I'm very impressed with how deeply you read the book. So you know it awfully well. Thank you. Did you catch any typos while you were reading?
I did not, but if I find any, I'll send them to you.
All right. Well, I think self-awareness in general in a manager is crucial. And here's a beautiful one. I was teaching a management class in Ames, Iowa to a group of managers. The room was full. There was like 30 people in the room. And one manager who was sitting front and center, so there was no hiding. This person stuck their hand up and said, I just want to say that every manager needs to go to therapy.
Yes.
Because if you don't take care of your own stuff, you're no good to the rest of your team. And I thought that was a brave thing to say, you know, out loud. And they said it in front of the whole room and a bunch of people nodded their heads. They're like, yeah, absolutely. It broke the seal on that conversation. People are like, oh yeah, therapy is really important. So self-awareness, you know, to make sure that you are aware of what's holding you back or causing you to do things that maybe aren't very productive. You know, God knows I've got a list.
Yeah.
But so making sure that you know what's holding you back and what you can improve is great self-awareness. And oh, by the way, ties back to what we started with empathy. It's like, you know what? I've got my junk. My team probably has their junk. So, you know, maybe don't judge them so harshly when they make a mistake. Then, you know, once you've got your self-awareness down and you start to understand what you're looking for, then you can quickly course correct with a team member who maybe is spiraling. Maybe the change is just the straw that broke camel's back. Everything was fine. And then a beloved executive announced their retirement. And that was it for this person. You know, they had it up to here, had it up to their chin. And now Marty's retiring. Forget it. Just forget it. I'm done. they sit down and put ashes on their head. So it's like, if you can see that and know what's going on and take them someplace private and say, let's talk for a sec. How are you?
Yeah.
No, really. How are you? That can make all the difference and doesn't have to take very long.
Yeah. I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I don't necessarily think people have to become masters of change models, but you do need to know the signs of when people are struggling. I like to say when people are stuck. People get stuck in change. They get stuck in believing whether or not the change is real and it's something we should be doing. They get stuck and they're thinking about whether or not they can be successful. You should be looking for signs that people are stuck and figure out where are they stuck? What is it that's keeping them from moving on through the process? And then be able to have the appropriate conversation. But to your point, you have to know where you're stuck too. And so when you're self-aware, you can have conversations, even from a space of vulnerability to say, listen, I struggle at this, this, and this. This is an area that I can get better at. And I think when you're able to do that as a people leader and you're able to model it, then when people are also struggling, they feel comfortable proactively having those conversations with you about where they might be stuck from a change perspective or even a performance perspective. It's more of a two-way dialogue than as a people leader, you having to drag it out of them.
Yeah. It goes back to trust. Trust is huge. So not only do we need self-awareness, mm-hmm. and not only do we need to admit that we are broken and need to work on some stuff ourselves, but working on building trust through what you mentioned, which is reciprocity mm-hmm. and vulnerability. Like, you know, and to me, trust is about going first. And so as a leader, I'm going to go first. I'm going to be the first one to admit that I don't know what's going to happen as a result of this change, but I'm going to go find out and I'll let you know. Or to admit, yeah, this worries me too. You know, I really love Marty and I don't want him to leave. This worries me, but I'm going to go get some information and I'll bring it back to you. That's a great way to build trust in a team rather than making stuff up, stonewalling and going into your cave. Not helpful.
Not helpful. And I think that admitting is really important. I tell people I've literally been through 3 layoffs now. If I get 2 more, I'll get a fruit basket. But in each instance, I've been with people who this is their first one. This is the first time they are experiencing the insecurity of my livelihood may not exist in a few minutes, you know? And so what do I do about that? And the ability to say, I've been there. I too have been afraid. I'll tell you, the first time I got laid off, I was less than gracious about it. So I get it. Then that goes back to what you're saying about empathy. I can relate to what you're saying. And we can have the proper conversation now to talk about this might mean a change for you, a big one. And so how mm-hmm. do we work through that? As a people leader, I think those are the things that going back to where empathy and kindness and all of those things come into play is when you have to have conversations like that and help people through change that they want to know that they can trust you through the process, that you have their best interests at heart, that even when the messages are tough, you want them to be successful. And to the extent that you continue to demonstrate that as a people leader, I think it helps. I'm going to sort of switch gears just for a minute because we have been very deliberately talking about, I like to say people leaders is my favorite term, but your book is specifically for managers. One of the things that makes me twitch just a little bit is when I'm on LinkedIn and I see this conversation about leaders versus managers. And I love that you started off right away by, you know, just saying, who is this book for? And clarifying your viewpoint on leadership versus management. So I want to dive into that for a little bit. Share with the listeners your perspective on leadership versus management.
So this book is primarily, but not solely, aimed at people with the word manager in their title. So that's what I'm thinking of is, you know, you've got finance manager, L&D manager, folks like that. They usually have manager in their title. So I'm kind of matching the title of the book to the title of the person who's going to read the book. But then I talk a little bit about, so what's the difference, manager versus leader? And it's kind of a chicken and egg thing. Like, I think that all managers must be good leaders. If you're going to manage people, you are in a leadership position. You must be a good leader. And so a lot of the skills that I talk about in the book are, in fact, good leadership skills. Mm-hmm. Setting goals, delegating, coaching, providing feedback. These are all leadership skills. As a manager, you need to be a good leader. But there are people running around organizations who are excellent leaders who don't have management responsibility.
Yeah.
So there are excellent individual contributors who are leaders, but don't have the formal authority, quote, of having that title. So these are people who are influential. These are people who are able to get people to follow them and to get things done without and have immense influence without needing to coerce or pull in somebody higher ranked to get something done. And I think that there are managers running around without leadership skills.
Yes.
And that is unfortunate. Because if you're trying to manage using your positional authority alone in at any level of an organization, it doesn't have just to be first line manager. It could be at any level. If you're trying to throw your weight around with positional authority, in my world, you get to do that once. You can pull rank on me once.
Right.
You do it again, and we're going to have a private conversation. Because it's just not an effective way to get things done. It causes friction. It causes low morale. It causes a drop in productivity. So have I been clear on the difference between leader and manager and how, you know, you can be a leader without being a manager, without having that title? You can be a manager without leadership skill, but you won't get very far. And so I think that all managers need to be good leaders. And so I consider my audience for this book, I consider them leaders, and I say so, and I'm cheering them on.
Yeah,
you know, I see you as a leader, and I got your back.
I love that. The podcast is called Manager to Manage, but I, in conversation, always say people leader because I want to be very specific that I'm talking to people who your box is above somebody else's box, because I think it's a critical role. And I think it's one of those things where, right or wrong, I always describe it as being a manager, and I always have to clarify this part that I'm not at all equating managing to raising kids, but being a manager is like a parent and a leader is like the fun aunt. As a people leader, you have direct responsibilities for firing, coaching, developing, that as a leader, sometimes you don't have those responsibilities. You can inspire and you can like motivate people, but you don't have to write their performance review. You don't have to. You don't have to write their development plan. You don't have to have that difficult conversation with them. And so I think sometimes managers get almost an unfair rap in terms of, because of the position they hold, because of the title, because of the job responsibilities, it's easy for them to become the villain in someone's story. Whereas when you encounter, you know, Jim, who gives you this rousing speech that motivates you to do something, but he's not the person there every single day. It's very easy to have a preference for one versus the other.
Yep, totally agree.
What do you think we might have managers or people leaders that don't have the requisite leadership skills to do their jobs well?
Well, I don't think that people, you know, wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to wreak havoc on my organization. I'm pretty sure that people don't do that. It's usually just not being exposed to the resources. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are accidental managers.
Yes.
Like I was, you know, even though I expressed interest in becoming a manager, I was hoping to get something a little bit different than what I got. You know, I didn't expect to be thrown in the deep end with a performance management issue right away. But I think a lot of folks are like, you know what? You are the best engineer. You are the best financial analyst. We're gonna promote you to lead a team of financial analysts or engineers. You'll be great. Off you go. Got any questions? Give me a call. That's my hypothesis. I think that's what happens a lot. I think most people want to do right by the people they lead.
Okay.
And they may just not have the resources. And resources could include money to take training classes. They may not have the support they need. They may not have the knowledge or the wherewithal to understand that, you know, there's things that they can go to. So that's why I wrote this book thinking, you know what, I'm going to price it reasonably. I'm going to make it available in 3 different formats. And then I'm going to offer a course that supports the book so that people can get this knowledge, whether they spend a little or spend a lot, they can get the knowledge in the way that works best for them.
The book is wonderful. I highly encourage everyone to run out and get it. It is really packed full of not only research and theory and things to kind of ground you, but practical steps for how to implement some things, which I, again, as a pragmatic girl myself, happen to love. But tell us a little bit about your courses as well. So what if someone reads the book and is like, I want more, what happens in your courses?
Yeah. So I am putting the finishing touches on Lead Like a Pro, the course. And it's going to go deep into every chapter of the book. So right now it's looking like it'll be 4 2.5-hour days spread out. And so we'll make it easy for people to attend. I'm going to offer that to corporations for intact teams, for groups of up to 30 at a time. And then I'm also going to offer it via the web, and individuals can sign up for it. You know, if you don't have a whole bunch of managers in your organization, you just got one or two, you can send them that way. Or if you just want to send somebody to kind of check it out to see if this would be right for your organization, send one person and take a test drive. Then I've got 19 other courses in my stable, including DISC, situational leadership, everything from goal setting to time management. Change management is a big part of it. I do a lot of presentation skills work. Mm-hmm. So there's a real breadth of content on my website. Oh. So that's my favorite thing to do, is to facilitate and teach.
Oh, you're a kindred spirit. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested in any of Eric's courses, you'll find the link to his website in the show notes. And normally, as you all know, we don't typically promote like training and things of that nature, but many of us who work in leadership development are also people leaders. And so we have a special view of how and what people need and influences how we build things. So I wanted to share it with you. I have one last question for you, Eric. I think about it all the time. How do you want to be remembered as a people leader?
I think I'd like people to remember me as kind and fair and fun.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, like I drive for results, but let's have a good time at the same time.
Yeah. Because it's not one or the other. We can have a good time. We can work really hard. We can achieve things, and we can like working with one another. It's we'll have to choose.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I love it. Well, listen, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. If anyone wants to reach out to you and just ask follow-up questions, learn more about you, what's the best way for them to do that?
A couple ways. LinkedIn. I'm really easy to find on LinkedIn. I'm Eric P. Girard at LinkedIn. You can email me, eric@girardtrainingsolutions.com. And Girard is spelled G-I-R, the French way, not the English way, which is G-E-R. And then I'm on Instagram, eric.p.girard.
On behalf of all the listeners, thank you so much for sharing your expertise in the book and with me today. And I do hope that people will check it out. And I hope that we have more conversations in the future.
Absolutely. I would love that.
All right. So ladies and gentlemen, Eric Girard. And again, I encourage you, if nothing else, is always a takeaway. I encourage you to think about self-assessing. So think about how you feel about change and empathy and leadership and where you might have some areas to grow. And create just a development plan for yourself. Think about what's one or two things you can do that once you have some self-awareness that you could do to really improve yourself in that area. So on behalf of Eric and myself, thank you for listening to Manager to Manager, and we'll see you next time.